Check out my new book, Reach All Readers, at reachallreaders.com. When you pre-order, you'll get special access to my Science of Reading mini course. Learn more at reachallreaders.com. Hello, Anna Geiger here from The Measured Mom, and today I'm sharing a conversation with kindergarten teacher Casey Juergens. I've already shared interviews that discuss how to differentiate foundational skills from the start, but Casey wanted to share how he has found success beginning with a whole group phonics lesson and then differentiating in small groups. Now, just to be clear, this is not my preferred model when students are at different skill levels, but I think it's important to hear different perspectives and to hear about Casey's success that he's had with this method. So here we go. Welcome, Casey.
Well, hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining me to talk about your teaching and differentiation. So can you introduce us to yourself a little bit? Tell us about your teaching experience and what you're doing now.
Yeah, so my name's Casey Juergens, and this is my 10th year of teaching. And I have kind of taught, and I started out kind of teaching in rural Iowa, and then I spent the bulk of my career so far teaching in more of an urban setting in the middle of a city. In a more of an underserved, you know, typically underserved population. And all of that time was spent teaching first grade. And now for the second year in a row, I'm teaching kindergarten. And the school I'm in now is kind of a unique situation. It's a suburban school, but about 50% of our population is made up of multilingual learner students, very diverse school. So maybe a little bit atypical of what you'd think. So that's a little bit of that. I have a master's degree, and I just kind of mentioned that it's kind of a unique master's degree in culturally responsive teaching and equity.
Okay.
And so, you know, just a part of that is kind of how the lens of how I kind of approach things is what we focused on there. So, yeah.
So do you have a favorite grade?
You know, I really like both of them. It's hard. Mm-hmm. You know, I like teaching first grade, and a lot of great things happen in first grade. I'm really loving kindergarten too. I'm finding that I really like that first foundational year. Mm-hmm. So I'm loving both. I think, you know, eventually I might, you know, head back up, but yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about how you teach your foundational skills in your kindergarten class.
Yeah, so I use my overall literacy block is, you know, maybe typical what people think of. It's 120 minutes, and about half of that time is devoted to foundational skills, and about half of the time is devoted to kind of that other side of, you know, the reading rope, if you will, using a content literacy curriculum. And then within that foundational skills block, you know, we really try to align together, right? Think our handwriting, our phonemic awareness, phonics, spelling, connected text, it all meshes well together into this block of time. And I do use, you know, predominantly a whole group model for instruction. That doesn't mean that I never see small groups. It doesn't mean that I haven't done small groups, right? And this model that I kind of use now really, in my experience, has led to the best results or the greatest outcomes for learners. So, you know, that's just kind of an overview of the block. Is there anything more specific that you want me to dive into?
No. So talk to me a little bit about how you do use small groups and how you decide when and how to form them, et cetera.
Yeah, for sure. So like many people, right, we start the year with our universal screener, okay? Mm-hmm. And we use that for kind of, you know, two different pieces. So one, we're going to look at, okay, who's high risk, who's potentially needing, you know, that tier two intervention. And then what are our whole group needs? So a lot of times that leads into, you know, maybe a deeper dive into a diagnostic piece. In kindergarten, it's a little bit different because, you know, we're kind of starting at the beginning, but we do like a letter sounds focus at the beginning. And then that kind of determines, okay, you know, where specifically are we going to start? Kind of the first small group that I see is within that 1 hour block of time. And that's a very fluid group of students, really based on what I'm seeing maybe weekly, based on progress monitoring. It might be based on just what I saw that day in right? Who needs a little bit of that extra dosage? And who maybe just needs more practice. And then in an additional time, I should make this kind of clear, that tier two time is an addition to that block of time. And that's going to be a little bit more of a structured group that we're seeing, right? Some students are going out of the classroom to receive an intervention. I'm working with a group of students on a specific targeted intervention. And I'm using either diagnostic data to determine those small group needs or the universal screening data and then progress monitoring too, to kind of determine who still needs to be in the group, who's ready to exit, and those types of things.
So, thinking about this, I think, I just put myself back in situations that I've been in. I think about the year that I did try to do whole group phonics for the whole class. And it was very difficult because it was first grade. So I had kids who, a little girl who didn't know her letters and some kids who were reading like fourth grade material.
Right.
And what would you, in the way that you approach this, how would you handle that?
So, you know, I've been in that situation a few times, right? And I think one of the that we first look at kind of going back is, you know, looking at that universal screening data and then looking at the diagnostic data. And I have a few examples I can share of, you know, specifically what I did. And so we determined, especially in first grade or second grade, are we ready to begin the year whole class where we need to? Okay. Do we need to go back a little bit? Are we ready to go forward, right? And then are there specific groups? So like the final year that I taught first grade 2 years ago, I had a pretty distinct group like you're talking about with that one student, right? They were missing some letter sounds. They were missing some of those pieces. So right there, that was my first group, right? And we started right off the bat, you know, week two of school, week three of school. I still kept them in that whole group time, though, because especially what we were doing at the beginning of the year still allowed them to kind of grow in that practice, right? There may have been a little bit of a struggle there, but we made sure to kind of, you know, put some scaffolds into place to support them. And then for those students kind of on that higher end, too, I think one of the things is, you know, I've maybe never had quite like a group that was reading that high before, but I've definitely had students that were above grade level. Is, I think sometimes we're scared. We see that and we go, okay, they're going to be so bored in this instruction. That's just never been my experience necessarily, right, that they've been bored. And I think a couple of things like, you know, keeping a quick pace, you know, moving along in your scope and sequence, you know, continuing to make sure, you know, you're moving along quickly, right? Keeps those kids engaged. Especially in first grade, we always added multisyllabic words into what we were doing, right? And that, I remember specifically a group of boys that I had that were above grade level, and they just ate that up, right? That was really a way to kind of push them forward. I also would take those students and we might continue to grow in fluency, right? Some of those types of things.
So what thing I'm trying to work out is, so like, though we've got a class of kids and the grade level skill is CVCE words, but I have kids who still aren't reading CVC words yet,
right,
and kids who are beyond. So I guess I'm wondering what exactly are those kids who are much below the grade level skill getting out of the whole group lesson?
Well, I think it's important for them to hear the modeling. I think it's important for them to you know, continue on. I guess it's not been my experience that when I got to CVCE words that many students weren't able to continue on with that, right? If we're doing a dictation or when we're reading the words, because of, you know, the modeling or the scaffolds that we're putting in place. You know, it could be just something like choral reading. It could be something, right, like we are segmenting the sounds together and then they're writing it. So I guess I can't really think of a specific time where that really impacted them. And I feel like it continues to, you know, push those kids forward, right?
So I think the argument on the other side would be,
we know that to get these kids caught up to grade level benchmarks and maybe beyond, they need lots of instruction at where they're at. So the argument would be, well, why don't we differentiate from the beginning so that during this, instead of doing the whole group where they're not getting exactly what they need, they can get it at during this time and then additionally in tier two. What's your thought on that?
Well, I guess I don't necessarily completely disagree with you on that. I get what you're saying, but what I worry about though is, I think that sounds really nice when we sit here and talk about it. And it's like, okay, we're going to put these groups and this, the focus of this group and the focus of this group. I think what actually happens in reality in a lot of situations though, is that group is always going to stay behind. So we have to talk about how do we take this group of kids and yes, go in and fill in where, what they're missing and what they need, but we've also got to make sure they're making accelerated growth towards the end of it so that they don't always, you know, stay in that group that's behind, right? And if I'm taking this group of kids and we're spending, you know, X amount of time just on CVC words, waiting till everybody's showing 100% mastery of that, but now I've got another group that's in CVC words and I've got another group that's in vowel teams and I've got another group that's doing, you know, R controlled. Now we've got kids, we're continuing to spread that gap. We're making that gap even bigger, I guess is what I would see. So, and maybe I'm not explaining it in the best way. I guess what I've seen by starting everybody at that place using your data has allowed for us to close gaps a lot quicker.
So, but if, okay, help me with that part. If you're using data, aren't you seeing that these kids are behind? So therefore we need to give them a different kind of instruction instead of the on level. Like how does the data inform the whole group?
Well, so I'll kind of go into a couple of examples, if that's okay. So, sure. So I was thinking back and looking at some data from the past. And so a good example of this is, you know, probably 7 or 8 years ago when we were first shifting this focus, you know, we had been balanced literacy before. We came in, we did our universal screener. Only about 25% of our kids were meeting that benchmark at the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. We gave the diagnostic. This is the beginning of first grade. Many, many of our students didn't have, were lacking letter sounds, couldn't blend in and encode CVC words. So we made a decision as a grade level team. We sat down and said, okay, what are we going to do about this before we dive in to, you know, where we were supposed to start? And even though we had some kids that were ready, you know, we spent the first 6 weeks and we did, it's actually a model that I use in my kindergarten classroom now, but in first grade, and we started and we did a letter sound of the day. We went through and reviewed. We started, you know, teaching how, you know, by the fourth day, we were blending and encoding CVC words. And by building on that, you know, by the end of that 6 weeks, 80% of the kids had letter sounds. They were blending and encoding CVC words, and we were ready to move on. There was maybe still a little group that hadn't completely mastered that yet, but we moved into that next phase, and they still got that additional, you know, small group where we're continuing to fill in those gaps.
Thanks for explaining that. So basically, from what you were saying, you saw most of the kids were well below, so we did a whole group, basically a whole class intervention, basically.
Right, because what we didn't want to do is we weren't going to take 75% of the kids and do a tier two piece.
Sure.
You know, we could have, you know, thinking about what you're saying, you know, another option we could have done is said, okay, how could we have grouped it out? I guess at the time we didn't even really, you know, we were being told at the time, you're going to figure out how to do this whole group model that everybody's going to. And we still, by the end of the year, made it to our end of the year expectations, right? And I had in my notes that the class moved, you know, 25% to 75%, which 75% is maybe still a little bit lower than what we'd like to see. But, you know, this is also year one of the show, right? That's pretty good. You know, thinking about the, you know, fast forward about 5 years, you know, I had my first grade class came in, about 60% were meeting that benchmark. So now you've got, okay, we're not going to go back whole class necessarily. So then we're using that diagnostic and it's like, okay, so the 8 that didn't meet, about 4 were just under, right? We consider those kind of the bubble kids. They're not going to need a ton to get them where they need to be. And a lot of what we were doing whole group really fit their need, right? If you look, you know, typically first grade maybe reviews CVC words, or they start getting into digraphs with CVC words, maybe starting to get into some consonant blends. You know, and if you've got your letter sounds, a lot of those things are really, you know, applicable to you. You know, you can do that. And then I had a group that I really did need to see every single day. We had to go back and backfill in those pieces. And what I saw was what I was doing with them in small group, they could still apply that to what we were doing in whole group. And by the time we got to December, when we were doing Magic E or CVCE, you know, they had caught up enough to where that was attainable to them.
But first of all, going back to what you said before, like, I definitely agree that if the group is very similar, as like you said, like most of your class was at a very low, then it makes perfect sense to do the whole group instruction. Interestingly, I've been reading some work by Carol Connor. She did a lot of work on differentiation and interesting things that she found. And differentiating in small groups, both comprehension and foundational skills. And she found that it was much more effective to teach skills in small group in terms of outcomes. But I also know that, I mean, a lot of that makes sense, just the idea of having a small group because you have kids close together, you can get bigger, better feedback and everything. But I also know that a teacher has so many things to manage. So just if teaching in a small group is helpful, that's great, but we don't necessarily want to do small groups for the sake of small groups, because that's just not practical. And because we're the kids that aren't in small group aren't getting the teacher's attention. Or not a lot of it. So I know, like, when you talked before we did this, you'd mentioned your concern that people that are in small groups, the lowest level kids in small groups, just tend to stay there. And I think back to the balanced literacy model, which I did also at one time. And that was true, because I certainly wasn't doing any kind of MTSS or anything. Like, they just stayed there. There was no extra double dose of instruction to catch them up or to get them closer. So that is definitely a problem. So if teachers are grouping by level, and you've got kids as in like, by, I shouldn't say level, but by need, instructional need, and you've got kids that are quite behind maybe in the scope and sequence, and then you're not doing anything extra beyond that, that is definitely a problem. You're talking about teaching everybody the whole group lesson, because tell me more about why you think that's so important that everybody gets the grade level skill, even if they're not necessarily there.
Well, I think you kind of touched on it, and I'll add in, I agree with you. You know, we don't want to do the groups of just doing sake of groups, right? So then what does that look like? So one of the things I think about is what are the other kids doing, right? Mm-hmm. We have to have that discussion when we're doing this, right? We know a lot of the research, like you mentioned, says, yeah, a small group focused on a specific targeted area, it leads to these great outcomes for kids, right? And that's not, you know, it's wonderful. But in a classroom of 26 kindergartners, and I'm seeing four kids over here, what are those other 22 being asked to do? That's effective, right? And not kind of a time waster. And I think when we look at some different models of what different curricula kind of put into place, and that's where I struggle with the, we're going to see three groups a day because that's what this curriculum says I should do, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to make these groups. Well, then how much time are kids spending maybe practicing skills away from the teacher, you know? And so is that helping those students that are behind? Whereas in this model, right, they're getting all of that instruction. Yes, maybe a little bit of it is, you know, a little bit out of their reach. And I think it's important to remember, like, and I'm talking from a kindergarten and first grade perspective, right? This might look completely different if I was a third grade teacher, right? Now I've got larger gaps to fill in. So I think some of that is, it's a little bit expensive in terms of time, you know, planning, time, resources, thinking about what the other kids are doing. And also thinking about just maybe a little bit inefficient, right? So if I've got this 1 hour or 2 hours of my day, what's the best way I want to spend that time? Assuming it's just me by myself, right? Mm-hmm. How am I during that hour of time? So, you know, that's one of the things I believe why I think this is a better way to do it. And I think I also will just add in that my outcomes at, you know, two different schools and two different grade levels kind of have spoken for themselves, because I was definitely that person, like I said, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, we were doing not only the guided reading groups, but there was a time where we did do the skills groups. And I was that, I was the person really arguing for that. And I think what shifted my mindset was seeing how impactful this actually was, you know, switching it to the other way.
So tell me about your outcomes. Like, what specifically did you see?
Well, so like multiple years of teaching first grade, the last few years, you know, we're looking at 90 to 95% of kids leaving at grade level, right? That year that I talked about where we, you know, we came in and I had kind of the two groups that I saw, and they moved up, you know, that year, 95% left at grade level. And the one student that didn't was like right under there. Not only that, you know, we were looking at 90 to 100% of kids making aggressive growth. And I think one thing that a valid argument for not doing it the way I do is, like you were talking about, those kids reading at the fourth grade level, right? Well, that was always a huge concern of mine. And, you know, it made me nervous because I'm like, well, I'm not seeing them in a small group. I'm not, you know, am I meeting their needs? And when I saw that those kids were still making aggressive growth from the whole group instruction, I was going, oh, they are. This is meeting a need, right? They are still making that growth. You know, looking at my kindergarten class from last year, you know, by the middle of the year last year, 100% of the students were on grade level.
Congratulations.
According to, you know, in the universal screener. And not only that, I actually pulled it up here. I think all but one student made aggressive growth in that time span, mm-hmm. right? And we look at, you know, typical growth, aggressive growth is more than what you'd expect in mm-hmm. that time. And we haven't done our mid-year data, mid-year screening yet this year. But according to from looking at my progress monitoring data, every student is on track. And this year I started at a much lower spot than I did last year, right? Mm-hmm. So we've been able to, you know, continue to close those gaps. If I look at things like letter sounds, you know, this year 16 out of my 24 students came in with 0 to 3 letter sounds. Mm. So we started in with our letter sound of the day. You know, we were following some of the, you know, maybe most recent best practices, you know, using letters and things like that, that they talk about. And, you know, now 24 out of 24 students, you know, 65 days later are all showing mastery of at least 85% of their sounds, right? There's mm-hmm. some that they're still, you know, mixing up B and D or something like that. Right. And that's, it kind of almost surprises me. I was a little nervous. I was like, is this going to work this year? And it really has shown it has, right? And I, you know, another thing I'll say on that is I think about some of the kids I have in my class this year that came in at high risk, or, you know, I've got two students in my class that are newcomers to the country, right? So they're not only, they're getting this, but they're also developing their language skills. And I'm looking at, you know, where I would have potentially placed them in a small group at the beginning of the year. And I'm going, would they have been making this much growth if I had only been seeing them in maybe that 15 or 20 minute group versus them getting this hour of instruction, right? You know, some of them, I mean, they're now reading the decodable passages that we're doing. They're, you know, they're flying through our dictation and things like that. So that's really what has sold me on this model of instruction.
So your point about, I think it's important to think about what it looks like for a single teacher versus a group of teachers working together, because I agree that if you're doing this on your own, which is what many teachers find themselves doing, it is really hard to meet with your students enough if you're doing small groups. I know the ideal situation is to work across the grade level, group across the grade level, if you choose to start that way with the small groups, if needed, based on data. And so that the kids actually get like every day 20 to 30 minutes of targeted small group instruction. And I know that some schools make that work, but I also know that if you're just getting started or other people aren't on board with that, that could be difficult. Talk to me, there was another thing in Carol Connor's worksheets in a, I don't have a study to share on this, but she was talking in a presentation, and she said that when they compared kids who had the whole group lesson versus the differentiation, and it was a high poverty school, and what they found was the kids that were higher to start didn't really grow that year. They just stagnated. And that you said your experience was different.
Yeah.
So that makes different. I'd like to hear, maybe we can just kind of close out with how you make your whole group lessons effective for everyone, because there's a lot of skill involved in doing that. And if someone hears this and says, that's what I want to do, I just want to do the whole group and then differentiate as needed, but their whole group instruction is not impactful, they're not going to see that. Good outcomes. So talk to us about how you do that.
And I agree that's probably the most common question that I get, is people are going, you know, or they're saying, you know, I'll just back up a second before I go into it. You know, I see a lot of people, like, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with, like, YouFly, right? It's kind of taken off, right? Which is kind of that model of whole group followed by, you know, this is what kids need to go in. And I do see a lot of people going, well, I'm taught the lesson exactly what the book said, you know, and then these kids aren't growing. And, you know, that's where that teacher training comes into play too, right? Where I've had a lot of that, so I can really decipher and discern what we need to be doing. I think for some of the higher students, I think some things in the lesson are, you know, moving along that scope and sequence, you know, pretty quickly, right? So in this time in my kindergarten classroom, right, we've gone through our letter sounds. We're going back through, we're almost through our second round of letter sounds, but on the second round of letter sounds, we're really focusing on the encoding and decoding piece, right? And most students now are showing mastery of CVC words. So now we're starting to get into, you know, words with four phonemes in them. Well, I'm noticing that, you know, the kids that are really globbing onto that are some of those higher learners. You know, I've even started kind of even just here and there putting in like a word like sunset, right? Mm-hmm. And showing some of them. So just even just little things like that to kind of show some of your higher learners how those words work, right? Or sometimes more advanced spelling rules that might be over, you know, I might tell everybody about it. It might be over the heads of some kids and they're globbing on to, you know, oh yeah, I understand. This word starts with a C because, you know, the vowel is an A, right? And that for many kindergartners right now, that's not a typical thing I would expect them to have mastered. One thing I do to whole group differentiate is everybody has in their book box, they have what we call like a fluency sheet. And I did the same thing in first grade, and we spend a few minutes each day going on to it. It's also something they can do if they finish work early. And everybody kind of does have something a little bit different tailored to their needs, right? The majority of kids have, you know, CVC words or CVC sentences. Some kids have, you know, additional sentences, or they've moved on to words with consonant blends in them, or words that have maybe even like a two-syllable compound word. As the year goes on, I might even take like first grade fluency passages and put those into some of their kids' fluency folder. So when they get that out, they're practicing something that's, you know, attainable to them, but yet kind of pushing them forward in that sense. Another great way to do that is kind of, you know, utilizing in my students' book boxes, right? They have their books that they find in the classroom library, but then they have a specific folder, right, that I have them put their decodable books in. And so that if we need to, we can pull that out. And that's another great way is, you know, kind of in my decodable library of books, I can find books that might be a little bit more advanced, but not... And we can put that in students' folders. And that might sound kind of complicated, but it's really not. You know, it's much more flexible, but it is helping meet the needs of some of those students who are ready to kind of move beyond that. You know, so those are just a few kind of maybe more simple things that I can mm-hmm. think of.
And then, so one more thing. So you have the whole group lesson. How long does that take?
So the whole group lesson right now is anywhere from 30 to 45 minutes. But you have to account, you know, I want to make sure that that's clear, that that's not me standing in front of kids in seats for 45 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. We're doing you know, a different task every 5 minutes during that time, right? And we're moving pretty quickly. Our routines are down. And it's, you know, all flowing together very nicely, right?
And then you do differentiation after that, which you don't count as tier two, correct?
So during that time, I would say I don't consider that a tier two. And that might look like, you know, for example, today, today I actually flipped it because of, you know, we have weird schedules, right? People know. And we actually did our like 10 to 15 minutes time at the beginning of our block. And students were practicing their decodables around the room, right? And I pulled over three kids to the table and we worked on some additional just decoding, right? Together in that group while the rest of the kids were practicing their decodable texts independently or, you know, other skill practice that they have in their boxes. But that was more just based off of kind of a need that I saw, right? And then, you know, yesterday, students at the end of the block of time were playing like the roll and read games, right, that we see. And they were practicing that. And I actually, instead of taking a group to the table, I decided to, you know, kind of target specific students. And I just kind of, you know, monitored them while they were playing the game, provided feedback. Oh, let's go back, you know, read that one again. You know, and I kind of had them situated at a table near each other. So they weren't being singled out by any means, but I could really monitor that and kind of, you know, make sure I'm monitoring the rest of the class too. In the additional like 20 minutes a day of tier two time, if needed, I can see a more systematic, structured group of kids. You know, I'm fortunate to work at a school where we have, you know, a large, wonderful intervention staff that can, you know, help see some of those students. So at that time, you know, I think right now I have three students that go out to that.
Okay.
Right. And then the rest of the students are not receiving any tier one during that time.
Right.
Right. And right now I'm not actually seeing a group just because I don't currently have a specific need. At this current time, we're doing some testing. I'm doing some one-on-one work with specific kids and that kind of thing. But maybe after our mid-year testing, you know, there might be a small group that, you know, falls out based on after we do that universal screener again.
So I don't think I reached out to learn if there was any. And I've not learned of any specific study that has tested these two things we're talking about, as in compared whole group, you know, quality whole group instruction with differentiation built in and then a little differentiation afterwards versus differentiating from the beginning and then adding on tier two. So I think what data is really what we're looking at. And if what you're doing is getting your kids where you want them to go and you're seeing growth across the board, that's wonderful. And I think probably people want to reach out to you and learn more about maybe if they have questions, if this is something they want to do, or if they're trying to make the most of the time that they have. So can we share your Twitter in the show notes?
Yes, of course. Yep.
Any other way that people can get in touch with you, or is that the best way?
That's probably the best way.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking time to talk to me and explain how you make things work in your classroom.
Yeah. Thank you.
You can find the show notes for this episode at themeasuredmom.com/episode158. Talk to you next time.
That's all for this episode of Triple R Teaching. For more educational resources, visit Anna at her home base, themeasuredmom.com, and join our teaching community. We look forward to helping you reflect, refine, and recharge on the next episode of Triple R Teaching.